Routes Through Pokemon Adventures. I'm your host, Shaylock.
I'm Ruby.
And together we are a father-daughter duo, sometimes joined by other guests, as we venture through the routes of Pokemon that take us from the mainline video game series, the anime, and the Pokemon Adventures manga. And this week we are covering the last two chapters of the manga, Volume 3, Chapter 39, Just a Spearow Carrier, and Chapter 40, A Charizard and a Champion. And we will be covering six episodes of the anime, 77 through 82, which are Round 1, Begin, Fire and Ice, The Fourth Round, Rumble, A Friend Indeed, Friend and Foe Alike, and Friends to the End. And these will cover all the concluding pieces of the Indigo League story as Ash battles his way through the Indigo Plateau stuff in the anime, and where Red and Blue and Green all join the final tournaments at Indigo Plateau. And the next week we will finally cover our attempts at Indigo Plateau, where we battle the Elite Four, which is very different than what is covered in the manga and anime. Alright, so let's get started on this epic finale. We will start with our manga, and that is Chapter 39, Just a Spearow Carrier. Okay, so we start with the Pokemon Lovers Club president guy running around like crazy. We met him before with his Kadabra or something, or Abra. It was an Abra or Kadabra that eventually evolved into a Kadabra or Alakazam when...
It was an Abra because of
a baby. Oh, that's right. It was cute as Abra, and now it's not cute anymore. But he let Red borrow it when he went onto the SSN to beat up Lieutenant Surge in the manga. So he's running around like crazy. It seems like it's an excitement for the tournament, and he runs into people. Then he finds a Spearow just kind of wandering around and wonders who it belongs to, and that he would make whoever owns the Spearow an honorary member of the club right off the bat, because he just loves the Spearow. But then the mysterious owner shows up, and we can only see like his feet and maybe, I think, a hand or something as he asks for his Spearow.
You can see his feet in one.
Yeah. The club president is astonished. Then we see a muscly arm and definitely his bound up hands, like they're bandaged or something.
Maybe it's a janitor.
As he enters the tournament, and when this mysterious stranger sees that Red, Green, and Blue are all in the paperwork as well, he is happy to see that, quote unquote, all three made it. So he seems to know who Red, Blue, and Green are, and he wants them to be able to be in the tournament, whoever this mysterious individual is. So there's a platform in the center of a huge crowd, and it is likely where the Pokemon League Championship battles will take place. We see Red use Poliwrath to take out a Scyther and get first place in his lineup to make it to the semifinals. Blue sees Red and hops off the stage as he is announced the winner of his group, which also means he will be in the semifinals. So then Blue says something... I can't tell if he's telling Red or just letting the audience, like the readers, know, but he basically explains that every Pokemon League champion from the Indigo League or whatever has come from Pallet Town, which is where Red and Blue are both from. And so the question is whether it will be Red who wins or Blue. Then Blue mentions he looks forward to facing Red in the final round, which seems pretty confident since they're both in the semifinals, which doesn't necessarily mean they'll both make it to the finals, because what if one of them loses?
They're both just confident that they're going to win.
Yeah. So then on the way up to the center stage, as the champions of their groups were called up there, Red sees Green using her Nidoran female to flirt with some Fisher's Nidoran male, and the Fisher smokes... the Fisher's smoking, it looks like, right? He has, like, a cigarette or something?
Yeah.
Which is interesting, because that's actually what their sprites, I believe, look like in the original Japanese version, but they got kind of edited when it came to America, because they didn't want to show that in the kids' game. And so Green tries to convince the Fisher to show their connection, their link to each other, by trading his Butterfree for her Weedle.
Yeah.
But Red calls her out, and she tries to play it cool. Then, when Red asks what she is doing there, we see she has announced the winner of her group, and is also making it to the semifinals. And then we learn that she is also from Pallet Town. What? That's a surprise.
Yep.
And it makes me wonder how big this town is, that Red, Blue, and Green don't even know each other, really. Because remember, Red didn't know who Blue was.
Oh.
Originally, way back.
That's interesting.
Anyway, Bill shows up and congratulates Red and shows Red the matchups for the semifinals. And we see that it's Red versus Blue and Green versus somebody we don't know, since the speech bubble cleverly conceals that person. So we can't even see. And then, of course, Red's upset about not facing Blue in the actual finals. And Bill says that life doesn't follow a script. So I thought that was really cool that, like, it's a story being told. And so usually in stories, you know, the big main characters, they meet up in the final match, right? It always happens.
Yep, they star on the exact opposite side.
Right. But instead, they're actually in the semifinals. So they both can't be in the finals. I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah.
So then we see Green and Dr. O, which is the name of the mystery man, enter the arena. Yeah, Dr. O. Dr. O also has some bandages across parts of his face, we find, so it conceals his identity. To me, he looks a lot like the classic Rat King from the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, like the original comic and the goofier, like, 80s, 90s cartoon.
It took me a minute to really think about who he was. I'm like, I wonder who that is. It's stupid because you can see the picture and it's kind of obvious.
So he has one Pokeball attached to the front of his belt, like a Texas-sized belt buckle. And then he has more down the sides of his legs, which I thought was an interesting, like, gear up for his Pokeballs. So Green shoots out, like, sends out Jigglypuff, and Red assumes Green starts off with Jiggly to get the opponent to let its guard down. And Green criticizes Dr. O for using a Spearow in the semifinals and assumes he thinks she's just a helpless little girl. So then Jiggly blasts Spearow, and she thinks she's won with a single shot like the other battles, but then Spearow shoots forward, a fury attacks, and she claims it isn't fair. Jiggly sings, and while it doesn't put Spearow to sleep, Blue says he's too fast or something, I don't remember exactly what, it does start to put Red to sleep. Red shouts at Green to switch to an aerial battle, and she says she can't, because she doesn't have any flying-type Pokemon. Which took me, made me pause for a bit. I'm like, wait a second, she doesn't? She was flying before, but that was with Jigglypuff.
Yep.
We've seen Ditto, we've seen Jigglypuff, we've seen Blastoise. Oh, and Clefairy to Clefable. But yeah, so cute Pokemon. And Blastoise.
And Blastoise.
Because I think all the like, Clefable, Clefairy, Jigglypuff, and Ditto are all pink.
Well, I would argue that Ditto is purplish.
I suppose. They're pinkish colors, anyway.
Yeah. The classic girly colors, pink and purple.
Classic girly colors, right? Dr. O says Green is the one who may have underestimated her opponent, and he sends out Dodrio and Pidgeotto or Pidgeot, I couldn't tell which. Which shows that, so far, all his Pokemon that he sent out are all flying types.
Mm-hmm.
And Red guesses the mysterious Dr. O must know Green's weakness when he sends these out, and she is cowering. Then Dr. O gets close and says, "Let that be a lesson to you. Stealing is wrong." So it seems that he knows Green a little bit better and that she's a thief, because we've all learned that she's a thief.
Yeah.
Green finds an opening while wondering who the guy is and has Jiggly disable him. Then she unleashes Blastoise, since this has become an aerial battle, and apparently Blastoise can fly around in his shell with the power of his water jets.
Wait, but I thought she couldn't switch to an aerial battle.
Right? She is attached to the shell and flies with it, and then unleashes Hydro Pump at Dr. O. The mask starts to slip off, and Dr. O mentions birds sending words back to people, and that his Spearow can't do that with words, but... And then it uses Mirror Move, and the water is directed back at Green and Blastoise. The screens in the stadium even show the health levels of Pokemon, which is kind of fun. I like how they bring in the levels and stuff in the manga a lot more. Then Spearow flaps near Green, and she cowers again, not wanting it to come any closer. Then Dr. O calls out Green on her phobia of flying type, and says that 6 years ago, a girl, at the age of 5, was abducted by a legendary bird Pokemon. The silhouette doesn't look like the 3 legendary birds, and I had to guess that it might be Ho-Oh.
Yeah.
There's a picture of the little girl, and she looks familiar. Then Dr. O says he had a grandson about the same age, and so he couldn't help but get involved in the investigation and search for this missing little girl, and so he never forgot her face. Oh, the flashback shows just the back of the people in the story in the woods directing a bunch of others in the search, but even still, the back of those two people look a lot like Professor Oak and a young Blue. So then Dr. O holds up a picture caught by his security camera of Green stealing Squirtle. And he says how surprised he was to find the very same girl break into his lab and steal the Pokemon. Then Red and Bill seem to figure out who Dr. O is. When we saw the health earlier, Blastoise had a little bit of health left. So Professor Oak is revealed, and he says that it makes sense. The event would have traumatized her to flying-type Pokemon. She gets angry and tries to have Blastoise hit Professor Oak, but Spearow just mirror moves again, and Blastoise is defeated, making Professor Oak the champion of that semifinal match. So now we get all the connections. She was from Pallet Town, but had been kidnapped, which is why the others didn't really know her.
Yeah.
And she did steal. She was the one who stole Squirtle, which we kind of figured before.
But Gary, no, not Gary. Red and Blue grew up together in the same town the entire time and weren't taken away by some bird.
Right. Well, we assume. We don't know if Red actually grew up there. We just know that he's from there somehow. Maybe they just mean he's from there because he got his Pokemon there.
Makes me wonder.
Because this also where he got the Pokedex, right? Because he already had the Poliwhirl from somewhere. But he met, like, he got Bulbasaur.
Wait, which one's Gary, essentially?
Blue.
Okay.
So Blue definitely was raised there.
Well, Ash and Gary are both from Pallet Town in the show.
True. So after winning, Green explains that she stole because she had been far away from home and knew no one. And when she learned other people her age from Pallet were given Pokedexes and Pokemon, she wanted them too. It wasn't fair. So then Professor Oak hopes she's learned her lesson about stealing and gives her a third Pokedex, officially making her a trainer from Pallet Town. Oh, so when he gives that to her and says she's officially a trainer from Pallet Town, it's because of the Pokedex. So that could be why Red is considered from Pallet Town.
Oh.
Right?
Yeah. But she was from Pallet Town originally. That's why she got it.
Well, I understand that. I understand that. But I'm just trying to piece the mystery that is Red.
Maybe Pallet Town's just like a city.
Maybe. So she cries, and Bill cries too, because he can relate to being carried off by a legendary bird, because it happened to him when he was trapped in, what, Rattata or something? Blue talks to Oak in the locker room and says that whoever wins between him and Red needs to face Professor Oak. And the professor smiles and says, no, that he already won a championship before in his life, and we see a flash of his past facing some lady who looks a lot like
Agatha
of the Elite Four. Not that we know who she is yet in video games, anime, or manga. And so Oak bowed out after his win against Green, which then makes Red and Blue's semifinal match actually become the final match, which means Red and Blue get to face each other in the final match. And once again, we're back into the tropes of storytelling.
But it was really cool.
It was cool. It was fun how they messed around with that. And then we get chapter 40, the final chapter of basically Red's arc, because we get a whole new thing in the next four volumes. Chapter 40, a Charizard and a champion. Red and Blue stand on the stage, ready to battle. They both hold Pokeballs and put their wrists together against each other, and then, like, in, like, a, like, match thing. I don't know, like...
It was kind of cool.
It was cool. I thought it was a nifty way to do things. And then they both drop their Pokeballs to the ground, and as soon as they hit, the fight begins. Yeah, the whole thing, how they entered, like, they did that thing and then dropped the Pokeballs to, like, kind of start the fight. It makes me want, like, the rules and ideas of how they do these things fleshed out more. Like, is that something you do? Because then, you know, part of it is how fast the Pokeball drops and all that stuff to start everything. I'm just curious. Curious. And also makes it, like, if you're both doing it that way, then you can't, like, a lot of times in the anime, we see somebody pull out their Pokemon and throw it out, and then the other one does it. So technically, they could choose a type advantage then.
Yeah, I don't think that's fair, though.
Not that they usually do, but they could. Whereas this method, they've already chosen, right? So they have to start with what they drop, and then they can go from there.
Yeah, I like that much better.
I think it's cool. So anyway, it turns out they both dropped their starters. So we have Venusaur and Charizard pop out because they've been fully evolved by now. So Blue thought Red thought that Blue would lead with a water type, and that's why Red chose a grass Pokemon, which seems odd. I don't know why Blue would think Red would think that. or why Red would even think that. But whatever. But then Charizard gets too close to the grass Pokemon, even though he has type advantage, and he gets hit with poison powder. And Red tells Blue not to get too cocky. Then he uses Razor Leaf, and Red swaps for Snorlax. But before...
Okay, who's Red again?
The hero. Okay. So Red has Venusaur use Razor Leaf, and then he swaps out for Snorlax. But then he has Snorlax go for a Mega Punch, but before it lands, we see something in the smoke grab Snorlax's arms. Because there's a bunch of smoke for some reason. Oh, from the poison powder. The smoke of the poison powder. So because his arms are grabbed, Red has Snorlax go for a Mega Kick. But Snorlax's legs are then caught by some more arms as well. Because Blue had also switched out a Pokemon and brought out Machamp, who has four arms. Snorlax and Machamp wrestle at a standstill for a while. Then Machamp picks up Snorlax, twirls him about, and slams him on the ground and cracks the arena floor. Then Machamp comes over with a karate chop. Then Machamp comes over with a karate chop, while Snorlax uses Harden. But Machamp doesn't aim for Snorlax, and actually aims for the floor instead, and hits part of the broken ground, which acts as like a lever, and launches Snorlax far up into the sky! And the announcer declares that a Pokemon that touches the ground outside the arena is out of bounds, and therefore out of the match. Oak is quite impressed with Blue learning to think on his feet and adapt, more like Red always does, and thinks his son is growing up and not being so arrogant as before. Then Snorlax comes crashing down with a double edge move onto Machamp, never actually having touched the ground outside of the arena.
Sneaky, sneaky.
Yup. Red points out that Snorlax is more maneuverable than Blue might have thought. Oak realizes Red kept his cool and shored up his instincts with knowledge like Blue tends to do, so he has also grown up some. It seems they have both learned to be a little more like the other, and both seem to benefit from that. Then Red notices that Blue can tell how Machamp is doing without even looking at the system and realizes he's different now. So Red even notices that Blue has changed and become more in tune with his Pokemon. Because originally, Blue didn't seem to recognize the problem with the Kangaskhan back in the woods forever ago when they met, like Red had noticed. Then Red brings back Snorlax as he realizes the poor Pokemon has been through it already and he's recognizing his limits, like Blue had told him to do before, recognize his limits. So again, they're all noticing in each other that they've changed and grown and been learning from each other.
Yeah.
Which is awesome. Oh, and it was also cool because these were all these comments about each other and their realizations of each other are backed up by flashbacks to the moments when these things were said or displays of them doing the things they've learned to do now.
Oh, I skipped it.
From the past. So that, I thought that was really cool.
Yeah.
And now Blue is using Ninetales at this point, which is the Pokemon they disagreed on who it belonged to during their weird trade thing. Remember when they accidentally traded Pokemon?
Yeah.
Which is what gave Blue Machamp.
Who had Vulpix, though?
Neither one had Vulpix. A Ninetales was caught. Blue caught it using Red's Pokemon. And Red used Blue's Pokemon to help. So there was some debate on whose Ninetales it really should be, but Blue was technically the one who caught it with his Pokeball.
Who threw the Pokeball at?
Blue.
And it was Blue's Pokeball?
It was Blue's Pokeball, and he threw...
Okay, well...
Well, then... it might have been Red's Pokeball, because they all switch Pokeballs. Either way.
Then it should be Blue's.
That's not what you said back in the day. When we talked about it before, you felt it belonged to Red, but Blue is the one who has it.
Why would I say that?
Don't ask me. I don't remember exactly how the conversation went. And then they cross paths again because they both go to try to catch a Ninetales?
Yeah, and then Red catches it in his Pokeball, but Blue takes it because it was his Pokemon that weakened it.
Yes, even though it was technically...
I think it was so stupid.
Yeah, it technically it belonged to both of them. Because actually, Red used... Or Blue used Red's Pokemon to originally weaken it. Red used Blue's Pokemon to finish weakening it. Then they both threw Pokeballs and Red caught it with his Pokeball.
So I think but Red
Blue
get
is
it.
The first one who engaged it. So I mean,
I still think it should go to Red.
I mean, I can see an argument either way.
It's Red's.
Okay. Oh, and Blue also points out earlier that Machamp had evolved under Red's care. The two are very connected in a lot of ways at this point, with all the trading and helping each other and learning from each other. And then, in the stands, we see four shadowy figures, one of them resembling the woman Oak had beat in his championship flashback. You know, Agatha. One lady refers to a brute-looking guy as Bruno, who we met in the anime episode Master the Unexpected. Bruno doesn't respond, So it was a girl with glasses that pointed to him, and when he doesn't respond, she thinks the sullen one, Blue, will win, and a caped guy says that the cheerful one, Red, is about to make his choice. Agatha chuckles quietly. Then, tired of waiting for Red, Blue attacks, and Ninetale uses Fire Blast, which creates a symbol kind of like we saw in the Fire Gym episode of the anime. And Red had pulled up Poliwrath, and so this Fire Blast hits Poliwrath up into the ceiling. Then Red tries Pikachu, who also gets blasted up, and then both fall to the ground. Blue had shut down air attacks because heat rises. Then he pulls out Charizard to follow fire with fire, and Red pulls out...
Venusaur!
Is he insane? The spectators agree this is a foolish move, because of course, grass weak to fire. Blue thinks he gets it, and that Red wants to finish the match where they are both using the Pokemon they got from Professor Oak. Blue claims that this is a very, very Red thing to do, that he would choose sentimentality over victory. And which, I mean, he's probably not too far off with that comment. That is a very Red thing to do. Red has Venusaur wrap Charizard up in vines. Blue thinks this is ridiculous and is about to say more until he notices a rain cloud inside the building hovering overhead. Green realizes in the stands it isn't just any rain cloud, and Red confirms this thought when he tells Blue it is a thundercloud. Then he asks if Blue really thought Red was dumb enough to use Vine against, like a Vine Whip or whatever, against Charizard, which is pretty much what he was doing to anyone not inside Red's head. Like, that's what it looked like to everybody else. He explains that Poliwrath's superheated water droplets had condensed into a cloud. They were heated because Blue threw out Poliwrath into Ninetales' attack. Red threw out Poliwrath into Ninetales' attack. Uh-huh. And then Pikachu charged the cloud with electric energy when he went up, and when that energy builds up enough to strike, it hits a vine that is sticking out after wrapping around Charizard, and so then it carries on down the vine and hits Charizard, frying him. Blue tries to get Charizard to get rid of the vine, and we get flashbacks of times Red spent with Pika, Polly, and Venusaur, and how they have been through a lot together. They have the power of friendship! With the explosion, everything is covered in cloud and mist, and when it lifts, Red stands there with his Charizard right behind him. And we have the announcer exclaim that the winner is Blue! And then Blue and Charizard topple, and a very weary Red stands, and then his three Pokemon that finish the fight stand behind him. Red is the champion!
Yay!
Green then uses her third place to try and get an endorsement deal. and third in quotes, because she technically is fourth, but since Professor Oak dropped out, she became third. And Red and Blue exchange looks of respect, and far above the stadium, Mew watches on. And then flits off. The end. So yeah, very cool ending to Red's like journey with the badges and everything. I thought the way they did the final tournament and everything was super cool. And just all the flashbacks to things that had happened before and how Red and Blue had learned from each other, I thought it was just really cool.
Mm-hmm.
And how they tried to play with us too, where they had like, oh, Red and Blue don't get to face each other in the finals. Oh, just kidding, now they do. And oh, Red... Or a Blue won. Oh, just kidding. It was actually Red that won. And Red's use of Pokemon and sort of science-y stuff to create thunderclouds and whatnot was kind of fun, too.
Yeah.
Alright, so with that part done, we move on to the anime. As they tackle the Indigo Plateau, and it's a little bit different of a setup on this one. So, we start in episode 77, round 1. Begin! Ash is finally at the Indigo Plateau, and after getting berated by Gary, he goes in to figure out how everything is supposed to proceed, because Gary's a jerk face. Again. So he's informed he doesn't even get to start in the actual Indigo Plateau stadium, but has to win 4 matches first in the 4 outside arenas, which all have a type associated with them. We have water, ground, grass, and ice. Brock flirts with the lady that's heading up the registrations, of course.
Yeah.
And Ash has a randomized result that puts him into the water arena first and facing off against Mandy the Magnificent. I think that was his name.
Oh, yeah. The one with the Team Rocket.
Yeah, so then... well, he's not part of Team Rocket. So meanwhile, Team Rocket is dressed up as some kind of news network reporters. And I forget what they called that. It was like the Beauty Network or Beautiful, Very Beautiful. I don't remember. It was something.
They had initials that meant like Very Beautiful Network.
Yeah, something stupid like that.
So VBN?
Yeah, something. Yeah. It was something, something N. I remember N for the network part.
And they wanted to take people's Pokemon through it.
Yeah. Yeah, right. That was their whole goal. They're interviewing people to try to find out what rare Pokemon they have to take it. And, like, the first person they interview doesn't have anything all that interesting. So they move on. And then they run into Mandy, who's, like, doing street magic in front of people, making his Pokeballs disappear and Pidgeys just fly away and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So then they interview Mandy, or try to, but he won't give them the time of day because he's like, I only interview at real networks. or networks that have viewers or something.
Yeah, yeah.
So, he insults them, basically, which makes them not like him very much, and because they're very prideful.
Yeah.
And then Ash later also has, like, a little run-in with Mandy, and he's, like, kind of excited. He's like, hey, I think we're facing off each other in the first match. And Mandy's just, like, very arrogant and rude about it, and like, yeah, not really a match, because you're no contest, basically.
Why does he even think that?
Because he thinks highly of himself.
So does he think no one's a real man?
I'm guessing so. But also throughout all this, Ash has to decide what Pokemon he wants to use. Because they only get 3 Pokemons for the Pokemons. Each contestant in the matches only get 3 Pokemon to use in the match. So he's just really debating what he wants. And he thinks to use Krabby. But of course some people are telling him not to use Krabby. Because Krabby's not really been in a fight. And that's one of my favorite parts. Krabby is just great with his sound effect.
It's not Krabby. It's
cookie. Yep. I absolutely love it.
Yeah.
So, we also find out that Professor, like, the whole town is at Professor Oak's to watch the matches on TV, including Ash's mom. And we get into the battle, and Ash does bring Krabby, despite, you know, Misty's saying not to do that.
Doesn't his mom say hi to Ash?
Yeah, she says hi. Because it's a video call.
No. Like, when they're watching him, she goes, hi, I see you, Ash, or something like that.
Oh, when he shows up on TV?
Uh-huh.
She might. I don't recall.
It sounds like
his mom to do something like that.
It's a TV. You can't talk.
So, we start off with Krabby versus Executor. And then in the announcer box, Jesse and James have taken over the microphone and cheer Ash on, which surprises Ash. But of course, it's because they really, really don't like Mandy after what he did to them.
They really don't like Ash, but they really, really don't like Mandy.
Exactly. But of course, because they did this, all the Officer Jennies show up and carry them off.
There's a bunch of Officer Jennies for the tournament.
And Team Rocket's like, Team Rocket's carted off again. Then Brock talks about, like, so he says something about the Jennies to show that he knows who they are. And Missy's like, how do you even know that? And Brock's like, it's easy. And because she's all like, they all look alike. And he starts explaining all the differences between the different Jennies.
One wears their skirt shorter than the other one.
Right.
And
I think,
one has this motorcycle on them.
Yup. So he knows all the differences. Not noting the badge symbols on their hats, which is usually how you tell the difference between the Jennies.
He never mentioned that.
Nope, he doesn't tell.
But he can tell which perfume each one uses.
Yes, he can.
Like, this one's designer rose perfume. This one's rose perfume. This one's cherry rose perfume.
So then Executor causes a whirlpool that puts Krabby down at the bottom of the pool. But Krabby gets out and eventually latches onto Executor's, like, leaves and won't let go. And that helps him win. I don't remember exactly how if that was all it took or whatever, but he wins.
Yeah, I don't remember.
And in winning, he evolves into Kingler. And now it's more like cookie, 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 cookie.
Instead of cookie, 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 it's cookie.
Yeah, he sounds
cookie.
More like Cookie Monster now.
I like it.
Yes, me too. And then Kingler has to face off, I don't remember what order it was, but he had to fight a Seedra and a Golbat.
Golbat was last, I believe.
I think you're right. So Seedra's first, and it's super fast, but Kingler still gets in a blow. And then Golbat is the challenge because it keeps flying high, but then Kingler just goes in the water and then shoots up from down below and takes out the Golbat. And so Ash loses no Pokemon in the battle, using only crappy Kingler, and Mandy gets completely defeated. Oh, and I think, tell me if I'm wrong, but if I remember correctly, before the match actually is over, Team Rocket does end up peering up behind the stadium, like they climb all the way up there to look over the stadium to finish seeing how the match goes, because they really want to see Mandy lose.
Yeah, I believe so.
Which is awesome.
Yeah. But when Kingler or Krabby evolved, I'm like, wait, does that count as using two Pokemon or not? And I wasn't sure. And it never mattered, because even if it was two Pokemon, he had that room to use them.
Yep. So then we move on to episode 78, Fire and Ice. We start off right off the bat in the middle of a battle between Ash and someone else on the ground arena. And Ash uses Squirtle to win out the battle. I don't even remember what he was fighting, but Squirtle wins.
And the I thought Arcanine was used in
the... In the ground? No.
Oh, yeah.
This is fire and ice.
It's later. I thought I remember it hitting a rock, but it must have just been an ice type.
Yeah. So then we also see that Gary was watching and claims that Ash has only won 2 easy matches. And I think we also saw Gary win his first match in the last episode, but I don't remember how that went.
Yeah, we did, because he was, I guess, more humble about it. And then Ash is like, I won!
Oh, that's right. With dignity. Showing this. Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that. Alright, so then, later, after this match is over, Misty shows up at the place that they're all staying at, and Ash isn't there, but his Pokemon are with Brock, and they're all eating. And she thinks this is completely irresponsible because Ash has other matches to do, and his Pokemon need to go to a Poke Center to be all fixed up before they have to do another match. So she's kind of angry about it. But Ash was hungry, so he went to go get food. And while he's walking around the city, he hears the song Road to Viridian City, which I thought was kind of fun. And it's playing as a parade thing goes by. And there's like vendors and shops everywhere in this area for the champions. So Misty and Brock catch up carrying his Pokeballs and convince him to see to his Pokemon at a Poke Center. But then they find the nearest Poke Center is too full. Mm-hmm. So as they look for another, Ash finds a restaurant. And somewhere in all this, Brock finds Joy's everywhere and knows the differences of them too.
Joy's engine, he's running in and out of the thing.
Yeah, he starts floating around with hearts all over his head because he's all
Isn't
excited.
Isn't that after he eats, though?
It might be. I don't remember where the Brock thing happens, but like, because there's two points of it, because he does see them all over the place and floats around, but there's also a point where he's just talking specifically about the Joys and the differences between them, just like he did with the Jennies in the last episode.
Because he was mainly floating around Joys, and then again, Misty's like, there's no difference!
Right. To Brock there is. And they're all perfect, apparently. But Ash does find a restaurant, and he gets told he can eat for free, and he thinks it's because the person's a fan, and so he tells Misty that, because I think Misty was chasing Brock down at one point during that, and then she comes back in. And she's like, no, everybody, all the contestants get to eat for free. It has nothing to do with you.
I'm so special! You're not special.
Right. Aw, man. But he's enjoying all his food, and while he's eating, Togepi plays around with a different table across the aisle there, and Pikachu notices a bunch of forks and knives are going to fall down and stab the naive Pokemon, so Pikachu saves Togepi by pushing him out of the way and almost getting skewered himself. All the knives and stuff stabbing in the ground all around poor little Pikachu spread out. And then Misty...
No, then Ash is talked to Pikachu.
About what?
And says, you shouldn't do that or mess around with those things, that's dangerous.
Maybe, but then Misty says, hey, Togepi, if you ever behave that way, like, you better never behave that way. Which it was Togepi that was doing it, and once again, Pikachu took better care of Togepi than Misty! Alright, so after that whole ridiculousness with Misty and Togepi, the gang go back out to find a Pokemon Center, and are approached by a creepy nurse with her face covered in a medical mask.
And short blue hair.
And short blue hair. The gang is told about a Pokemon Center down a dark alley the nurse came from.
Yeah.
And so they all go, because they're idiots. They mention that the Pokemon Center looks different than the others, and it has a big red Pokeball on top with a P on it for the Pokemon Center. Inside, Joy is standing behind the counter with her face frozen in a smile. Behind her, there's a large red P as well for the Pokemon Center with some bulletin tacked right underneath. Underneath the big, round part of the letter P. Brock notices he doesn't have his usual reaction to Joy, when he sees her, but he thinks that maybe he is suffering from an overload.
Hope Rock.
But then the gang makes some comments about trouble. Well, so first, the nurse that led them there has Pikachu and takes Pikachu behind the counter. But
and she does talk at one point.
The blue-haired nurse? Yes.
No.
That's what I was talking about.
Joy talks at one
point. Oh, yeah, Joy does talk. I remember that. Yep. But then Ash and them say, I forget what exactly they say, but they say something about trouble.
More than once.
And while they're saying it, blue-haired nurse and frozen-faced nurse Joy start to shudder and shake as if they're trying to resist something and they can't. Because they can't resist the words trouble. So then they start saying their motto and reveal themselves. Because I think one of the last things that Jesse does is take off the fake mask of Joy that she was wearing.
It was actually, Joy's disguise was actually pretty good.
What? It was a fake face. Like a cardboard cutout face. It didn't move.
Yes, it did. No. I thought it was cardboard and then I realized that it wasn't.
It didn't move at all. You heard her talk, but her face never moved.
It didn't?
No!
Are you sure?
Yes!
Are you positive?
I'm absolutely positive. It was so dumb!
I think it moved. Her mouth moved.
So anyway, Team Rocket, that's who it is. Blue hair, James, and Joy was Jesse. And they reveal themselves saying their stupid motto because they couldn't resist. And the little bulletin on the board falls, revealing that the P that we saw back there was actually an R, and the bulletin was covering the little extra stem for the R.
Yeah.
For Team Rocket. And then the
big Pokeball was also an R.
On the balloon part?
Yeah.
Was it? Because it was a P before, I don't remember how it got revealed to be an R.
Yeah, all the P's were R's.
Okay.
But it also was hiding the balloon.
Yes. So, they fly up in their thing because the basket was behind the counter, apparently, which is where they were standing. And the rest of the building kind of just falls over because it's just a fake building, basically. And I'd seen this episode before, and in my head, because I know Ash does it a lot, I thought it was Pidgeotto that popped the balloon, but it's not. Brock actually shoots out Onix, and Onix just is tall enough, it just grabs the balloon in its mouth and chomps on it, which was awesome. And then I don't even think he pops it, he just rips it around and then tosses them. So that was kind of fun.
Team Rocket's blasting off again.
Which means, of course, Pikachu got free and they got Pikachu back. And yeah, Team Rocket's blasting off again, like you said. But by this point, Pokemon centers have opened up again. So we cut to Ash in the middle of... So he got his Pokemon stuff. And so we cut to Ash in the middle of his third match. This one taking place in the Ice Arena. Both him and his opponent have already lost one Pokemon. And so now it's Kingler versus Cloyster. Cloyster hides in its shell using... Or some, I forget what the move is called, but just a retreaty kind of thing. I don't remember. But Kingler just keeps pounding on it over and over again until it cracks, which then defeats Cloyster.
Because no one's everyone's like, what's the point? He's going to wear himself out and lose. And Ash really had a plan.
Yeah. So then Arcanine comes out and does a number on Kingler. So Ash sends out Pikachu, who agilities all around, dodging attacks from Arcanine. But the plan was for Arcanine to melt all the ice, and now Pikachu is on a small floating iceberg, and Arcanine is on a bigger one. So now our ice field has become a water field. But then Pikachu dives into the water and comes up unleashing Thunderbolt, which electrifies all of it and destroys Arcanine. And with that, Ash wins his third match. One more to go. Dun, dun, dun. Then episode 79, the fourth round rumble. So, I do believe this one starts with Gary in the middle of his battle in the ground arena.
Yeah.
Using Nidoking versus the other one's Golem. And it's a close match. They're both down to one, but then Golem finishes off Nidoking and Gary loses and is out.
Whoop whoop.
His cheerleaders are all crying and so sad. And then we cut to Ash catching up with him outside the arena to be like, oh, to be a good sport about it all.
Yeah, he actually looked like he was sorry about it. And Gary looked kind of disappointed.
Yeah, Gary's definitely disappointed, but he puts on a brave face and says, oh, he just got distracted by the cheerleaders cheering. And I know you or one of the other kiddos was like, now he's just throwing the cheerleaders under the bus. But I don't think that's really what he was trying to do. I think he was just trying to say, like, just give an excuse of what happened, and that wasn't his skill necessarily. He just got distracted for a bit. He wasn't trying to, like, blame them for his loss.
I don't think I said he was throwing them under the bus.
Okay. Well, somebody said something to that effect, like blaming them. Then he's just like, they'll get over it. It'll be fine. And then he gets in the car and it drives off.
They cry louder at that point.
Yeah.
And then there's one who's not crying and just sitting in the passenger seat. And I'm like, she's suspicious.
She's not sitting in the passenger seat. She's the driver. Oh. Gary doesn't drive the car.
I thought like, he
ever.
Drove the car.
I don't think he ever drives the car. I think it's probably like his mom or something, actually. I don't know. I don't know who this lady is, but she's always driving it.
He was the driver.
I don't know if he ever drives.
Interesting.
Because he's too young to drive, just like Ash is.
That would... Yeah.
I mean, it's cartoon, so maybe. I don't know. But I don't think... She was definitely the one driving in that scene. I'm pretty sure.
Interesting. I didn't think she was the one driving it.
Which is why she wouldn't be amongst the cheerleaders cheering and crying. So, with that, it actually shakes Ash a little bit, and he starts having his own doubts about... Yeah. He thinks maybe he should quit while he's ahead, but I think it's Brock that, like, talks some sense into him. He's like, don't be an idiot, Ash.
Because it'd be kind of stupid to quit.
Like, why not just go, like, try? Like, quitting doesn't make any sense. So, then Ash gets his final match in the grass field, which is just, a grassy field. And
it seems like a normal field.
Oh, and Professor Oak and his mom show up. So they're not in Pallet anymore. They came to watch this match in person.
And not to put any pressure on him or anything, but they're like, well, now that Gary has lost, all the people in Pallet Town are counting on you. So you better win this.
Yeah. Misty's like, they're not helping. They're just adding more pressure.
Oh, I remember the other opponent in this
one. Yeah. Then we're waiting for the new opponent to show up, and we get, like, a whole presentation of this lady showing up. What was her name? Jeanette or something?
Yeah.
Jeanette. And, like, there's little flower petals and some Japanese-style type music playing, and she's wearing a kimono, and she comes out. And, of course, Brock is instantly in love with her. And she also has her own cheering squad, kind of like Gary did. And Misty keeps getting after Brock for wanting her to win suddenly.
He wants her to win, Ashton.
Right. He's like, she deserves the win. So Misty yells at him, like, three different times.
And I like Japanese things, so I also wanted Jeanette to win.
Yes, you were kind of rooting for her to win, too. So then we get into the match, and we start off... So Ash starts off with Grass-type, Bulbasaur, and she brings out Beedrill. And it's a cool match. Bulbasaur's really good at dodging the Twin Needle attacks and stuff, and eventually uses Leech Seed to win.
Yeah, it sticks right on the end of his stinger.
Yeah, and then wraps him all around and starts sucking the life out of him. So Beedrill's out, and so then she sends out...
Scyther,
that's right. So yeah, she kept using... Because I think he's a bug type too, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, she keeps using bug type, which is not a bad plan, because I think bug is strong... Type moves are strong against grass, if I remember correctly, but I could be wrong. This one's interesting, because it uses a... Scyther uses double team, which basically makes it look like there's three of him for some reason. And it was really funny, because... It looks like two illusions kind of just come out from the center one, because that's just how you do this in an art style or whatever.
Yeah.
And my son, Flame, who's been on here before, he was like, it's obvious it's the middle one, because the other two slid out from it.
He was very insistent on it.
I'm like, well, I mean, first of all, it's just an animation, so who knows? But also... It's possible that one of the ones that slid was the original, leaving the illusion behind. And he didn't think that made any sense. But what does Bulbasaur do off the bat? Vine whip in the middle one, which vanishes because it was an illusion.
And for a minute, Flame thought that he went for one of the side ones. So he's like, Ash, you're an idiot. It's obviously the middle one. And we're both like, he just struck the middle one.
It was funny. Like, Flame and Ash might have something in common. So the Scyther and its illusions basically are coming from all kinds of different directions, keep going in, and finally Ash gets the bright idea. It's like, hey, Bulbasaur, just vine whip all of them. It's like, okay. Like, why did it took that long to figure this out? And sure enough, hits the real one and eventually wins the match.
Mm-hmm.
So Ash is kicking butt. He still has all three Pokemon, and Jeanette is down to one.
Although Bulbasaur is getting a little weak.
Well, obviously, he's getting tired out. Yeah, because he had to do a lot of dodging.
And I'm still rooting for Jeanette.
So then,
Jeanette, so, cool.
So then they're all like wondering what awesome Pokemon Jeanette's going to bring out this time, because Scyther's a pretty big deal, and Beedrill's the final evolution of its line, right? So, and technically at this point, Scyther is the final evolution of its time, because there wasn't an evolution yet for him. And so they're all like, what's coming? And it brings up Bellsprout.
Ash, you better kill us, Bellsprout!
And Ruby's immediate reaction was like, well, that's it, Ash. Just give up now. The game is over. You can't win.
Then he kept going, so I told him I'd kill him if he didn't kill the Bellsprout. Mean knock out the Bellsprout. I mean kill the Bellsprout.
Yeah, if you've listened to previous episodes, you know how much Ruby hates Bellsprout. And it's so funny. So, anyway, Bellsprout shows up, and sure enough, it kicks Bulbasaur's butt. And then Ash is like, sweet, I'll use Pikachu. And this part really just is super annoying, because then Pikachu uses Thunderbolt, of course. Which, I think electricity is, like, kind of weak against grass? Maybe it's not even that. I'm not sure. Nonetheless, it has absolutely zero effect on Bellsprout, because Bellsprout reaches its vines into the ground, grounding it, which is why electric attacks do not work against ground-type Pokemon. But I figured Jesse and James see this Pikachu as special. Maybe it's special because it can actually defeat ground-type Pokemon, which it has. But now it can't hit a grass Pokemon because it's grounded? Seriously? What is this? It's ridiculous, is what it is. So
Bellsprout's ridiculous.
Bellsprout. I think I just need a team full of Bellsprout now, just to drive Ruby insane. Anyway.
I'm sorry, I'm quitting from the whole Pokemon podcast. Have a nice life.
Anyway, Bellsprout then defeats Pikachu with some martial arty moves.
He just kicks him on the head.
Basically, it seems like this Bellsprout was taught judo and learned to, like, catch people's hits and throw them to the ground and win. So then, of course, everybody's wondering what Ash is going to pull out next, because he didn't discuss it with Misty and Brock or anything, or have them on the sidelines coaching. So they're all wondering, but Oak already knew, because he brought it special for Ash, because Ash thought he might need it. And actually, as far as grass-type Pokemon, the Muk that he brings out, being a poison type, would be strong against it. The only problem is I don't know if it actually works against Bellsprout, because I think both Oddish and Bellsprout, while being grass, are grass poison, kind of like Bulbasaur is.
Huh.
And so I don't think poison actually is strong, like, you know, super effective. I think it's just normal, which is fine. I could be wrong. I don't remember what Bellsprout's type is. He might just be strictly grass, but I don't recall. Anyway, Muk shows up. And Bellsprout uses its martial arty moves again, but of course they just kind of, like, bloop into Muk.
And at one point, Bellsprout's, like, completely topples Muk over, and Muk is, just turns into this, like, blob.
And then pops
fights
up.
His face again. I'm like, okay. I like you now, Muk.
Then Ash has Muk use Body Slam, and for Muk to do Body Slam, it's all just him, like, stretching up and then flopping down on top of the Bellsprout, who then is trying to use all its kicks and punches while completely covered. It looked like a poor person, like, stuck in a tent that collapsed or something.
Muk needs to stay there until the Bellsprout suffocates to death.
As we've discussed, Ruby has a very deep-seated hatred for Bellsprout. So, anyway, this is the end of Bellsprout, and Ash wins his fourth match.
And now I hate Ash because he didn't let Muk suffocate Bellsprout.
And so, now he'll get to fight in the actual Indigo Stadium. But that doesn't happen for a little bit, because we get an episode in between to fill it out a little bit. Because we go into episode 80, A Friend Indeed. So, after winning his fourth match, they go out to eat, to celebrate, and they go to a restaurant, but even though they're at a restaurant, Ash's mom decides to take over the kitchen and make the meal.
Well, they were walking along the street, and the mom's like, I'll cook for you, and Ash is like, where are you gonna cook? And then we see her cooking for the chefs.
And the chefs are all, like, standing there like, what the heck?
And everyone's like, the customers don't usually cook, ma'am.
Yep. And then after it's all done, they're all, because they're like, well, this could be very good or very bad. But it turns out to be delicious. And I think it's either Ash's mom or somebody else mentions that one of the chefs even asked for the recipe.
Well, Ash is like, or Misty or somebody's like, this is so good. No wonder the chef.
Oh, that's what it is. So Misty is the one who said it. All right. So then after the meal, they're all going, I don't know, back to where they are sleeping or something. I don't know where they're going, but they get into an elevator. But before it closes, some other kid comes running up, asking them to hold it. So they do and let him in. And this kid, his style, like his clothes are very different, but his style is very much like Ash.
Same haircut, too.
Yeah, same haircut, same, like, a lot of the same facial features, like eyes and height is all the same, and voice is very similar.
Not actually, same color.
Right. Though. I was kind of wondering if it was voiced by the same person, just with, like, a little slightly different tone or something. I didn't look it up, though, so I don't know. But they sounded very similar. And this kid is named Richie, they learn, eventually. And he goes to pet Pikachu, and they're all a little nervous about that, because we all know how that goes with Pikachu. But Pikachu likes it, and they kind of hit it off. But then the elevator shuts down, because the power kind of went out or something. So then Richie opens up the panel, and starts messing with the wires, and then asks to borrow Ash's Pikachu, and uses Pikachu to charge up the elevator and get them to the floor level.
Yeah, but before that, they're like, what are we going to do? And it's like, just wait till I guess they come and get us, and then Richie starts
stuff. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so Richie's got it all figured out. And so then, once they leave, they're kind of wandering around outside, and we have the people, well, supposedly people from the Pokemon League, saying they need everybody's Pokemon.
For inspection.
For inspection before the, you know, matches in the Indigo Stadium. And if you fail to do it, then you're out. So everybody kind of falls for it, despite the fact that it's just Jesse and James in poor disguises once again.
They just have glasses on and maybe a mustache. That's it! What kind of...
And uniforms. Uniforms.
So you're saying if I wear a new outfit, then you won't be able to recognize me?
I'm not saying that. I'm just saying they also had uniforms.
But that changes nothing!
It doesn't. So anyway, they all hand over their Pokeballs into this giant bag of stuff. Because, of course, the Pokeballs can turn mini and... the anime, at least. Then they go to reach for Pikachu, who, what you know, like usual, just electrifies the people that do it. Kind of ruining Jesse's costume a little bit, but not quite there. But I think it's Richie that's like, wait a second, you guys kind of remind me of those people from Team Rocket, or sound like it, or whatever. So Richie's a little bit more perceptive than Ash and Misty and Brock. And sure enough, they decide to reveal themselves with their motto and tearing off their costumes. And they get in their truck and drive away. So Ash and Richie decide to chase, and because they're on foot, they take a shortcut running down a hill. Ash goes even faster, and Richie tries to warn him, but eventually tackles him and stops him, which makes Ash mad. But...
Ash runs first, and then Richie's like, wait up.
Right. And Richie's like, if I didn't do that, you would have run right off the cliff. And Ash is like, no, I wouldn't. But they would. So then they climb down the cliff and get into the road and almost get smacked by, like, I don't know what their plan was, by jumping in front of the vehicle Jesse and James were driving.
When before, they almost blasted Ash with fire, which would have killed him.
Right? So anyway, but they swerve and drive down the hill instead.
To be fair, it was James driving. And
that's a good point, actually.
He's the nicer one, essentially.
Because he appreciated them saving their lives in the Blastoise episode. Yeah. I knew I liked James. Anyway.
So... I like him better than Bellsprout.
That's not saying much. So, they drive down the hill, and so Ash and Richie kind of chase again, and they drive down the river, but I think James had gotten knocked unconscious at this point, so...
Yeah, when they drove off.
Jesse was kind of steering from the passenger side. But then... Ash and Richie are trying to follow the path they took, the river, the creek, or whatever it is.
And oh, because they ended up in the river and they were floating along.
Floating? They just drove down the little river.
Oh, maybe they did.
Because we talked about it must be shallow, but they're able to drive. Huh. So anyway, that's why I say it's like a little creek or brook or something, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Ash and Richie are walking for a while, it gets dark out. Richie says, hey, we should really stop and get some rest. And he mentions he carries an extra backpack because he travels a lot, which doesn't make any sense.
When you travel as much as me, you always carry an extra. It's like, what?
Yeah.
You would want to travel like... That's what you said.
Then again, I don't travel that often like that, so maybe I'm wrong, maybe you do, but it seems kind of weird. Because most of the time, you would probably eventually find another place where you get more if you needed a new one for some purpose. Anyway, Because when they finally do camp out and talk about how much they love Pokemon and drawing constellations of Pokemon in the stars, like with a Pikachu and an Onix, we see that Ash has the nice comfy sleeping bag and Richie's sleeping with a pillow and blankets.
Who uses a pillow and blankets? Well, to be fair, they were sleeping on a sheet. So.
Yeah, they had a big old sheet that they were on. But see, this is what makes sense to me then. Like, it would make more sense to me that Richie would have a back, or like a sleeping bag, as well as maybe some blankets and stuff, right?
Yeah.
Not, like, some extra blankets or whatever. Not a whole extra sleeping bag.
That would make sense.
Which, it visually, that seems to be the case. So, after they kind of have their connection, realize that they both just really love Pokemon, they go to sleep, they get up the next day, they find...
Wait.
What?
I thought, when does Ash apologize?
Oh, probably at some point during that. I don't know.
I thought so. When Ash apologized, like, well, I guess I might have actually run off the cliff earlier.
Yeah, I think it's when they kind of settled down. Maybe it was on the walk part. Maybe it was when they finally set up camp. I don't remember which, but yeah. He does apologize. Because they do find, like, he realizes that, okay, they both are trying to do the same thing, and maybe Ash is just being a little too reckless.
Yeah.
So, yeah, then they get up the next morning, they walk down the... like river thing some more and find tracks leading out of the water. They follow the tracks. They find that Team Rocket is all snoozing, so they sneak past them and get into the truck and start searching through the Pokeballs. But then, well, they find Pikachu first. They get Pikachu out of the bag. And then Team Rocket shows up inside the doorway of the back of the vehicle and they're like, haha! And they shut it and lock them in, trapping them all, and drive off.
Mm-hmm.
And so then they're like, well, we gotta get out of here. So then try to find their Pokemon and stuff, and Ash is like, I can't tell which ones are mine. And Richie marked his with stars, because he's smart. And then Ash says, go, Bulbasaur! And it turns out to be Drowsy, because he doesn't know where his Pokemon are. So he calls him back, and he tries some more, and he gets like a Slowbro and...
Magikarp.
A Magikarp. And yeah, that's right, because somebody was wondering why somebody had brought a Magikarp to the tournament.
I was.
That's right.
Who brought the Magikarp to the tournament?
You bring your Pokemon and train them in between, you know? I don't know.
A Magikarp, that's going to win you the day.
You don't use the Magikarp in the tournament, but while you're waiting for your matches, you train up your Magikarp.
Okay.
To maybe get a Gyarados when you need it during the tournament.
Okay.
Anyway, so yeah, so he's trying different things, and then he's like, all right, well, I choose whoever you are, or something like that, because he just tries another Pokeball.
Well, he doesn't just try another one. Pikachu got out the right ones by sniffing them.
Oh, that's right. So he doesn't know which Pokemon of his it is, but it's one of his Pokemon.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, he's like, I choose whoever you are, or so, I forget what he says exactly, but he doesn't say who it is, because he doesn't know who it is. And this time it's Bulbasaur, when he said Bulbasaur earlier and got wrong Pokemon, so it was funny.
Oh, whoever you are.
But Bulbasaur can't get through the walls of the truck. So then Richie's like, well, why don't we try one of mine? And he brings out Zippo, which is his Charmander. And I'm guessing it's named Zippo because of, like, a lighter. There's a, you know, it's a type of lighter, and he's fire, so. And he uses his, like, scratch attack to break through the wall, which I thought it was going to be, like, the wall outside of the truck so
right,
they could all leave.
Right, because that'd be so much smarter.
Right? But instead, it's the wall between the back of the truck and the front. So then we get a Pokemon fight, and Jesse uses... Arbok.
Don't they go, hey, this is a rental or something after that?
Yeah, they did. They're like, this is a rental. Whatever. So she uses Arbok, and they get into a Pokemon battle where they're all calling out moves, but then James swerves and he says, turn attack!
Yeah.
So I just thought that was hilarious.
Oh! But before that, he was driving, and Jesse's like, James, go stop them. He's like, he's driving, and Jesse gets all mad. I'm like, girl. Why don't you drive or something?
Right? Yeah. So, she has to do the battling. But then, something happens. Like, I don't know if it's Pikachu's electric attack or something, but the engine gets fried and explodes.
Yeah.
Sending the whole front of the vehicle into pieces and sending Team Rocket blasting off again.
Mm-hmm.
Leaving Ash, Richie, and all the Pokemon in a directionless back of a truck that... Then flies off a cliff.
Yeah, the top half got cut off, too.
Oh, yeah, that's right. The top half is gone, too. So, yeah, they fly off a cliff and are going to go die. But Ash and Richie use their flying Pokemon, so Pidgeotto and Happy, the Butterfree,
mm-hmm.
to slow their downfall. And it's still not slow enough, so then they have them use their, like, gust or whirlwind attack or something. And that gives them enough slowdown that they land on the ground safely.
Mm-hmm.
And then they... are met back up, or they come back up with all the Pokemon. Everybody's happy.
Well, as soon as they landed, then a bunch of Officer Jennies come driving up with that big crowd or whatever.
That's right. So yeah, then everybody's back to normal. All the Pokemon are returned, and Ash and them get back up to the main event area, and they talk about their friendship and how they got close.
Yeah, and then there's some names on the board for who's facing who.
Right, and so then Ash decides to figure out who his next match is going to be, and so to do that, you have to fish in this little pond for a little
fake Magikarp.
Fake Magikarp, which has the number on it, and his signifies that he will be facing off against Richie, his new friend. Dun dun dun. Which is why we have the next episode titled Friend and Foe Alike. So here, he's a little distraught that he's going to be facing off Richie, but I think somebody suggests that this is actually a good thing because
Oak, I think.
Is it Oak? It sounds like something Professor Oak would say, because he's like, well, no matter if you win or lose, you can be happy, because if you lose, your friend won. You win, right? You can be happy for whoever won in the situation, because you're friends. So, that's actually a good thing. Good outlook, Professor Oak. And so, that's helpful. And Ash and Richie decide they're going to make this the best match ever. They're going to try real hard and make a good match for each other. And they promise. So then back at the sleeping quarters, whatever they're at, and there's a phone call from Richie. Misty's the one who answers the phone when Richie calls, and he's really mean to Misty, calling her a big mouth and stuff, and just get Ash on the phone, and so she's just whatever, I don't want to talk to this person. Ash, your jerk friend is on the phone. So then he gets on the phone, and Richie's like, yeah, we should meet up at this one place and bring your Pikachu. It's like, okay, sounds great. So he's like, yeah, I'm gonna go meet up with Richie, and he leaves. And when he gets there, he's like, Richie, where are you? And then he hears Richie, and he's standing off in the bushes for some weird reason with a mouth that looks like a wooden puppet. Because it's not Richie, because Team Rocket was using a voice modulator over the phone. And they're still using the modulator. Well, Jesse is, to sound like Richie. So Ash gets closer, and then Annette drops on him and Pikachu, and they're captured. And he's a little, I got a tournament to go to. They're like, too bad for you. And they throw him back in the back of the truck that got destroyed last episode. Must be another rental.
Well, it's a different truck.
It looked the same, didn't it?
There's no curtains or anything on the inside.
Was there curtains before? Uh-huh. Where?
On the walls.
There were not curtains on the walls?
Yes, there was.
There so was not.
Yes, there was. I remember seeing curtains.
Okay. Anyway.
And then this one's just a pickup truck. Oh, and this one also has a...
Is that a pickup truck? Because it's enclosed.
It's a semi-truck.
Is that a semi-truck either?
Yes, it is, because it has a big picture of Meowth on the side of it.
It is still not a semi-truck. Semi-trucks are much longer trailers, and the truck part, it's not a semi-truck.
Fine. It's a truck with a trailer.
It's not really a trailer. It's part of the truck. It's like a box. Oh. Kind of like a U-Haul van.
Okay. It's a U-Haul van with a big Meowth on the side. And it's just metal. Well, the other one was a kind of cozy-ish.
The other one was metal too.
No, was it? There was tan walls and everything. And this one's just silver metal. I remember!
I will, you know what? I do not remember any of this, but I will take your word for it.
And there were curtains. That were tied up.
Yes, ma'am. All right. Moving on, though. He's in the back here, and how does he... Oh, he escapes the first time by using Squirtle to fill up the entire thing with water, which causes them to swerve all around and stuff. And then he's running, and they are on two tires connected by the... I don't know my car terms very well, but the metal piece.
And they make some tire joke.
Yeah, well, they said something about, rolling after him or something like that, and then they're tired. There was, two puns in there, but they're really tired.
There's multiple puns, holes and stuff.
Oh, yeah, there's tons of puns. So Ash and Pikachu are being chased by Team Rocket running on the tires of this thing. Of what's nothing left of this truck, apparently. And then what happens? They get to, they catch up, but then, Weezing... Zapped. Oh, do they get zapped? I know Weezing causes, a big old smoke thing at some point.
No, Weezing is when the bikes... Because then he just comes out on the bike.
Yeah, I know, but I don't remember when the bike thing happens either. So why don't you take us through this part? So they're chasing him on the tires, and then what happens?
I think Pikachu electrifies them.
Sounds logical. But how do they catch up after that?
Then they use bikes, I believe. And Flame is like, this is perfect. He can just take one of their bikes and give it to Misty.
Oh, and, yeah.
And then smog attack is used.
Which slows Ash down so that he can catch up on the bikes.
Yeah, and then he can't see anything, and they're like, well, might as well give up. Either give us Pikachu or lose your match. And he's like,
So apparently, they thought it was a great idea to get off their bikes to clear this part.
Yeah, and then Ash jumps on a bike and just...
shoots well, off.
He's like, I promised Richie I'd be there for the match, but I can't get rid of Pikachu. And so he just hops on a bike and bikes off, and he goes, don't worry, I'll give it. Well, I'm just borrowing
it. Well, first they're like, he stole our bike. You can't steal our bike. We're the thieves.
But when they came on the bikes, I'm like, they probably just stole these bikes.
Probably. And yeah, then he's like, oh, I'm just borrowing it, which is exactly what he said to Misty.
And then he's riding up the hill. Then they come on their balloon with, yep, like, this claw thing, and they pick him up with his bike.
Yes.
And then the bird comes out at one point.
The bird?
Pidgey.
Pidgeotto?
Yeah.
Yeah, he uses Pidgeotto to carry Pikachu up to the balloon.
The basket gets zapped off, too.
Right, that's because he uses Pidgeotto and Pikachu, and Pikachu rides Pidgeotto up there.
Yeah.
And so Pikachu can get in there and zap them, and so then they go all flying off, and the basket's kind of gone. And then he has Pidgeotto carry him to the stadium.
But the balloon's not popped because it floated around during the battle.
Well, right. Well, the balloon can't be popped, otherwise he couldn't be carried off to the stadium.
Oh, that's how he was carried off.
Yeah, yeah, Pidgeotto was just pulling while Ash hung on the bike from the balloon.
Then I'm like, Pikachu and Pidgeotto are very exhausted. But then he starts being pulled there, and it gets dark out and everything, and...
So we have Richie already at the stadium, and they're all kind of wondering a little bit about where Ash is, but it's fine for the moment. And then Misty comes down and yells at Richie for being such a jerk face and wanting to know what he did to Ash after the phone call, since, you know, he had told him to meet him somewhere.
And she kind of beats him up and steps on his toes.
Yeah, she steps on his toes, and the announcer's like, whoa, I've never seen this. This is an intense fan. But then, yeah, then we keep kind of... And this might have even been before the whole battle with Team Rocket was done.
And he's like... Oh, and then he's like, I didn't do anything. And she's like, oh, you're telling the truth, aren't you?
Yeah. So then, as more time passes, we go back to them, and the judges have decided to just announce Richie the winner, because Ash hasn't shown up. And so one of the people goes over to tell Richie this, and Richie's like, no, I don't want to win this way. And he said, he promised he'd be here, and I know he would be here no matter what, so just wait longer. And they're like, okay, you can have 10 minutes. And then we cut again, and the guy's coming over. It's like, well, it's been 10 minutes. And he's like, but... And then we hear Ash's voice. Because he shows up on his bike in the balloon, and... Oh, and Ash's mom was, like, not worried about Ash at all during all this, just like with the Mr. Mime episode. And then when Ash does get there, she shouts down to Ash and tells him he better apologize for making all these nice people wait so long. Which Oak is like, Mrs. Ketchum, stop. Settle down. It was hilarious. So then they get into the final, final match for one of them, I guess, but into their match. And Ash starts out with Squirtle, and Richie starts out with Butterfree.
Happy.
And Happy wins. So then Ash decides to bring out... Oh, that's right. Spearow was exhausted by the time they got there, too. So he had Pidgeotto was exhausted by the time they got there. So he put Pidgeotto away. It's like, you did good. And, like, Pikachu's a little exhausted, too. But Pikachu still was determined to go out as the second Pokemon, which surprised Ash. He's like, I thought he would have been too tired for this. But he went in anyway to fight off and beat Butterfree.
At the beginning of the show, they were looking up stuff about all the trainers, and Ash is like, oh, there's information about Richie, and he won all four of his battles before this using only one Pokemon.
He used one of three Pokemon.
Well, yeah.
But each match, he never lost a Pokemon.
Mm-hmm.
So the second Pokemon Richie pulls out is Charmander, Zippo. And Zippo is able to defeat Pikachu, who was already kind of exhausted, so, I mean, not too terribly surprising at this point. And so then Ash is really concerned about what to do. He can't bring out Squirtle now, because Squirtle's already been used, so that's not going to defeat Charmander for him. And Bulbasaur would not be the greatest plan. So he decides to risk it all and send out Charizard. And Charizard kicks Charmander's butt by just basically flamethrowing all over the place, causing Charmander to run like crazy. And it's funny. And Ash is so happy that Charizard is finally listening to him. And so then Zippo's gone. And so then Richie pulls out the only other Pokemon we've ever seen him have. And that's Sparky, his Pikachu, with the kind of cool little hairdo.
Sparky last episode, too.
He did. We forgot to mention him. Which is probably why he knew how to handle Ash's Pikachu. So then Ash warns Charizard that, you know, Sparky is not as weak as he might look or whatever, like, to be prepared. Yeah. And Charizard and Sparky stare at each other, and then Charizard just, like, stomps his foot down, knocking Sparky over. Sparky gets back up, and he does it again. And then he, like, beats his wings really hard and blasts, like, Sparky back a ways. And he's like, this is stupid. Like, he lets out a little puff of smoke from his nostril or whatever, and he just lays down and goes to sleep because he's like, this is stupid. I don't want to do this.
Right before we knew that he was asleep, Richie's like, you've got this, Sparky, go for it. And so Sparky gets up and he runs towards it and then he stops. And he's like, he's taking a nap. Oh, okay.
Right, he's just laying there. And so, because Charizard refused to fight anymore, they call the match and Ash loses. He is out of the Indigo League Championship. And he is obviously very devastated by this. And Richie comes up to him.
It sounds like he cries a little
bit. It does. He even wipes his face, we see. But when he looks at Richie, he's all smiles and like forcing it. And he's like, that was a good match, Richie. Way to go. Like, he just congratulates his friend and moves on, which is a really cool thing. And even people like I think Oak and stuff and his mom were like proud of him for the way he behaves in that moment.
The next episode, he's crying in his bed.
Yeah. All right, and then that brings us to episode 82, Friends to the End. So Ash is super mopey over losing, and he's kind of a baby about it, even though he was making people proud at the end of the last episode. And Misty finally calls him out on it, and they can do a big old beef. Pikachu tries to settle him down. Then Oak and Brock and stuff are trying to settle him down, and eventually Pikachu's like, that's it, and zaps everyone.
Yeah.
But Ash finally is, like, realizing he's just kind of being a punk. Where did something else happen, I thought, to help him realize. I don't know. But anyway, Ash then makes his way over to the locker room where Richie is and encourages him to win. He's like, win this one for us. And he's, like, being a good sport about it, and things are a little bit better. And so then they get to watch the match. And this is the first match people get to use 6 Pokemon.
Yep.
And we don't really see all the ones they use. They just get to the last Pokemon of each person, I think.
We might see a few glimpses of.
And then Richie loses. So he didn't make it any further. And so then Ash and him are hanging out by some water. And they're just kind of like, hey, you know, we did good. We learned from our mistakes. Richie has a lot better attitude and understanding about all that.
Yeah.
He's like, learn from our mistakes. And know what not to do next time. And maybe we can do better next time, kind of thing. And Ash is kind of finally getting out of, you know, his own negative thoughts then, too. And their Pikachus are hanging out, having a good old time. And then They start walking away, and their Pikachus fall down a pit. And so Ash and Richie go to go save them and fall down in another pit. So Team Rocket dug 2 pits this time. Ha ha!
This was actually a slightly better plan than they've done in the past.
Their classic pit trap. And so, of course, they're gloating about it, and Ash tries to get out and falls back and lands on the thing, which causes the next level to cave in, because they made a second level to their pits, so they actually really kind of had 3 traps.
Yeah.
And they're all happy about it, and they grab the Pikachus in a cage that absorbs all the electricity they try to shoot out, which doesn't, you know, isn't great, and they think they're all going to be off scot-free instead of remembering that, you know, Ash and Richie have all the rest of their Pokemon. So Ash and Richie fly out of their pit with their Butterfree and Pidgeotto.
Happy.
Yep. And basically attack Team Rocket, letting the Pikachus free. And then I think the cage explodes because of all the absorbed electricity, which sends them blasting off again.
Ding! It was really cute because when Team Rocket blasted off and goes ding, my second youngest brother, who's like, almost 2, goes ding.
Yeah, because we
so
all,
cute and little.
Well, when we watch it, we all like to go ding after it dings, and so he was like ding, and it was hilarious.
It was so cute.
Yeah, it was adorable. So then, after that, we kind of get a scene back at, we get the closing ceremonies of the Pokemon League. And so we see them all march in there because they all get like a commemorative badge for participating. Mm-hmm. So that's exciting for them. Strangely, Gary's not there, but he did leave before.
He might have been there. I just didn't see him, but I didn't see the faces of everybody.
And they're all standing with like at least one Pokemon of theirs for some reason. And then we see like just the shadowy figures of the three winners because they're not anybody we know. And then once that's all cleared out, like it cuts like ahead and like we see like wind kind of blowing around a little bit of trash that's left over from the audience and stuff. And Ash is there with Richie and they kind of say their goodbyes and that they'll do better the next time when they face each other again someday or whatever, which I have a feeling probably never happens because the show's really bad about keeping up with those plot lines.
Yeah.
And then we have a really awesome moment where we play the theme song of Pokemon starts up and we see all the flashes from starting with round one and everything that goes through, like, of the different battles that took place, including Richie's battle and stuff. And we get to hear the full Pokemon theme song, first and second verse, and it's just so cool.
Yeah, I liked it.
That was one of my favorite moments. And then, like, there's a couple points where it fades out a little bit so Ash can say a couple things or whatever. They'll be like, yeah, well, you know, I'm gonna do this, I'm gonna be better, or whatever it is. And they're on their way back to Pallet Town. And that's the end of the Indigo League, despite the fact that Pokemon TV puts half of this stuff in the Orange Islands season. And so then, that means when we catch back up with the anime, we will be venturing into Orange Island territory, which will be interesting since that has nothing to do with any of the manga or video games. But that is it. That's the end of those journeys for Ash and Red. So then, next week, we will be able to talk about Ruby and I trying to tackle the Elite Four and catching another special Pokemon. But now it's time for Pokemon cards! And to start off with the Pokemon cards, I have a special surprise for Ruby! So, a while back, Ruby sacrificed what she wanted out of some Pokemon packs and was a little jealous over some of the things that came out of that pack that Rosella got to open, so I decided to give her a little gift of a Galarian Articuno tin with a special art Galarian Articuno.
Yes. It's kind of a full art picture with, like, the words on it, which is really cool. I like it when it's kind of like that. It's a psychic type. And has ability, Cruel Charge. When you play this Pokemon from your hand onto your bench during your turn, you may attach up to 2 psychic energy cards from your hand to this Pokemon. Then the, like, little thing that describes it. Known as Articuno, this Pokemon fires beams that can immobilize opponents as if they had been frozen solid.
Oh, that's cool. So it kind of still keeps, like, the ice type, like the original one, while being Articuno. Because I thought it was weird that they're not the types that they should be, since their names still reflect those types, like Arctic and Zap for electricity and all that stuff. And you have a Galarian Articuno in Go, too, don't you? Pokemon Go? You got that with your Master Ball? Nice. Is that your favorite of the 3 legendaries, even in the Galar versions?
Yeah.
Nice.
Both still my favorite.
Yeah, I knew it was your favorite in the regular. Well, cool. All right. Well, now time for the rest of the cards. All right, you want me to start this time?
Sure.
All right. So I'm opening a pack of Scarlet and Violet Paradox Rift with a image of Gallade, I think? I'm trying to remember the difference between Gallade and Gardevoir and what they look like, but I think it might be Gallade. I don't know. Doesn't matter. One of them. All right. So my first Pokemon is Dublade, evolves from Honedge, Steel type. And I think this might also be a ghost type, which makes it even cooler to me. But I don't know for sure, because I've never had one in the games. So, anyway, the two swords employ a strategy of rapidly alternating between offense and defense to bring down their prey. And I have Miltank, normal Pokemon. This Pokemon needs to be milked every day, or else it will fall ill. The flavor of Miltank milk changes with the seasons. And I have Wimpod, which is a water type. Wimpod gather in swarms, constantly on the lookout for danger. They scatter the moment they detect an enemy's presence, because they're, you know, wimps. But I do really like the way they look when they evolve. They're like, I forget what they're called exactly. Something pod, like Gallusopod, or I don't know. It's something weird. But I think they look really cool. And I think in Go, you need like 400 candy, kind of like with Magikarp and Gyarados.
Mm.
So, it's cool. And then I have Plusle! I first learned about Plusle the same time I learned like Espeon and Umbreon, and that was from playing Pokemon Colosseum. Electric type. It absorbs electricity from telephone poles. It shorts out its body to create crackling noises. That's funny, because sometimes you get weird crackly noises on the phone, or even on our recording sometimes. So it's a Plusle that's doing that. I know who to blame now. Oh, this is different. So this is Slitherwing, which I don't know who that is. It's a fighting type, but under the fighting type in HP, it says ancient. Like, it, all kind of how they would have, like, fusion strike on some things before. I've not seen that before.
I need no paradox tricks.
Have you seen that?
Oh, yeah. I've opened cards like that with a half and half almost.
Half and half?
Well, not half and half. Oh, it's, like, changing.
Oh, on the edge. It's all on the whole edge of the card, isn't it? Oh, I didn't even notice that. Did it say ancient up there?
I don't remember.
Oh. I wonder if... Oh, I bet you that's because this is the Paradox Pokemon stuff from Scarlet and Violet. We haven't gotten that far in the game, but remember how in Scarlet you had like those books of reports of like prehistoric looking versions of some of the Pokemon, like Donphan and stuff?
Oh, yeah.
And I had like futuristic-y ones, I think, in Violet. So I bet you that's what that is, which means it's probably like an ancient form of some other Pokemon. I don't know what, but it is.
I mean, open a paradox.
Alright, so this mysterious Pokemon has some similarities to a creature that an old book introduced as Slitherwing. Makes me want to beat Scarlet and Violet even more now. I'm very curious where that goes. Alright, then I have Ferrothorn, which is a steel type. Its spikes are harder than steel. This Pokemon crawls across rock walls by stabbing the spikes on its feelers into the stone. And has a exoskeleton ability, which just makes it take 30 less damage from attacks. Oh, okay. Got a weird-looking duster called Cursed Duster. Pokemon tool. Trainer card. If the Pokemon this card is attached to is knocked out by damage from an attack from your opponent's Pokemon, discard a random card from your opponent's hand. Ooh, and then I got a reverse holo of Gourgeist. Kind of like the picture here. Ability, Startling Pumpkin. If this Pokemon is knocked out by damage from an attack from your opponent's Pokemon, discard two random cards from your opponent's hand.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to put Cursed Duster on Gourgeist, it sounds like.
You just like to get rid of all the cards.
Yeah, you get all your cards are discarded. Ha ha! In the darkness of a new moon night, Gourgeist will come knocking. Whoever answers the door will be swept off into the afterlife. Creepy. Got another reverse holo called Flittle. I do not know this Pokemon. It's psychic type. Sorry, so was the Gourgeist. It spends its time running around wastelands. If anyone steals its beloved berries, it will chase them down and exact its revenge. Which sounds kind of intense for this cute looking little thing. Ooh, and then I have for my rare card, silver bordered and everything, all very shiny. Ting Lu, fighting type. I do not know this Pokemon either, but it looks kind of cool. The fear poured into an ancient ritual vessel has clad itself in rocks and dirt to become a Pokemon. And then I have a steel energy.
Okay. So I opened one of the packs that came out of the tin. It's Crown Zenith, which is from Sword and Shield because it's got the Pokemon on it. I don't know their names.
What Pokemon?
And Shield.
Oh, Zacian and Zamazenta, I think is how they're pronounced.
Yeah, definitely. All right, my first Pokemon is Galarian Mouth. Steel type. Living with a savage, seafaring people has toughened this Pokemon's body so much that parts of it have churned into or have turned to iron.
Nice.
Wilmer. Water type. It shows off by spraying jets of seawater from its from the nostrils above its eyes. It eats a solid ton of wishy-washy every day. What?
Well, that's what, I mean, animals in the real world prey upon other animals, so Pokemon prey on Pokemon.
Shinx. Electric type. All of its fur dazzles if danger is sensed. It flees while the foe is momentarily blinded.
I just got a Luxray V by trading Rosella because she had gotten one. Well, I think she opened that pack even on the podcast, maybe.
Deluxe gravy?
Yeah.
No, she's talked about it on the podcast, but she got it from a party.
Oh, that's right. Well, anyway.
Not even a pack.
She wanted, I think I gave her either like Entei or maybe that one was the Chiyu EX that she got, which was a Pokemon I didn't know, and it was fire, so.
Larvesta, fire type. The people of ancient times believed that Larvestas fell from the sun. Oddish! I love Oddish so much more than Bill Brown.
You're just biased because Oddish is from your game.
No, it's cute, see?
Yeah, it is cute. It was also the star of that one cartoon, too, wasn't it? With the Pokemon card game.
Yeah. Alright. Oddish, grass type. If exposed to moonlight, it starts to move. It roams far and wide at night to scatter its seeds. Hoopa, dark type. It's my reverse holo. It's also rare. It gathers things it likes and passes them through its loops to teleport them to a secret place.
Oh, that sounds fun.
Hopefully you don't go through my loops. Gumshoes. Evolves from Yungoos. Normal type. Patient by nature, this Pokemon loves control of itself and pounces when it spots its favorite meal. Rattata. I don't like Pokemon eating other Pokemon. It's also
Well, people
rare.
Eat Pokemon, too.
It's also rare. Trainer card. Item. Crushing Hammer. Flip a coin. If heads, discard an energy from one of your opponent's Pokemon. Dusclops. Evolves from Duskull. Psychic type. Its body is entirely hollow. When it opens its mouth, it sucks everything in as if it were a black hole. Bye. Trainer card, trekking shoes item. Look at the top card of your deck. You may put that card into your hand. If you don't, discard that card and draw a card. Ooh, perfect for me. A water type energy.
All right. So that is our episode this week. Next week, we will be back to the video game of Red and Blue, covering our journey through the Indigo Plateau and Cerulean Cave. And that will wrap up our adventure of Red and Blue, except for we'll have to clean up and catch the rest of our Pokemon, because I have a feeling we won't have them all by the end of that. But then, we are in for the long haul on Pokemon Adventures. I know we already went through a long stretch, but we will have even more, because we are venturing into territory that isn't really covered in the games, and that is the Orange Islands. So we will be covering Orange Island episodes, as well as going through the last four volumes of the first set of Pokemon Adventures manga, which is where we will meet the trainer Yellow. And so we will be following that journey at the same time as we cover Orange Islands. And once we finally reach the end of that arc, then we will be into Johto. We will start Silver and Gold, and we will also be jumping into that anime and manga of that period as well. That's the plan. That's where we're at. So I hope you're all excited. And if you're not, well, sucks to be you. Routes Through Pokemon is a Hunterfield Institute podcast. You can find us at our YouTube channel at Hunterfield Institute, and we have a Routes Through Pokemon playlist. And you can also find us on Spotify and Amazon and Apple and other podcast places. So go ahead and, you know, like, subscribe, comment, rate, review, all that stuff. But if you really want to get a hold of us, you can also email us at hunterfieldmanor@gmail.com. And I am also sometimes on X, formerly known as Twitter, at Hunterfield Inns. So you can always connect with me there as well. Otherwise, I think that is it. So we will catch you on the next route. Bye! Bye. Chapter 3. Hi-Ho Horsey.
I choose Horsey.
Violet's eyes gleamed with excitement as she declared her choice for the spirited water-type Pokemon. Misty handed her a chain with a colorful scale dangling from it.
Horsey was carrying this in its mouth when I rescued it,
Misty explained. Violet fastened the chain around her neck, the scale acting as a pendant and the symbol of her newfound partnership with Horsey.
You'll want to think of a name for your new friend, Midori suggested.
He smiled at Violet as he watched her hug her new Pokemon close.
So, Violet,
Misty started,
do you know which gym you might want to face first?
Violet looked up with uncertainty.
Well, not yours, probably. I think I might need to get some experience before I fight any gym. And, well, my one water Pokemon won't be able to do much to your water Pokemon.
Nodding, Misty said,
that's pretty smart, Violet. You keep thinking like that and you'll be a great trainer in no time.
We have a couple of options, Midori chimed in. If we head south, we could hit Saffron and face the psychic gym.
Actually, that way is blocked right now. The guards aren't letting anyone in. But you could take the underground path to Vermilion City,
offered Misty. Midori frowned. Isn't that Lieutenant Surge's gym?
Yes, but Diglett Cave is near there. You could try catching one of them before facing his electric Pokemon. Otherwise, going east will take you on a long route before you see any gyms. That would give plenty of time for you and Horsey to get stronger and form a better bond before it is really put to the test. Plus, the Horsey will have some advantage through the rock tunnel.
True, Midori agreed, but it is pretty dark in there. And if you want to face a gym a little sooner than that, Violet, we could always go to Pewter City. They use rock Pokemon in that gym, which Horsey will be able to handle, and the path through Mount Moon would be a great place to help your Horsey prepare. Overwhelmed with options, Violet ultimately decided that heading through Mount Moon into Pewter City was the best course of action. After leaving Cerulean Gym, the father and daughter stopped at a Pokemart and picked up some Pokeballs before heading off toward the mountain and its winding caves. As the pair reached Mount Moon, the looming cave entrance evoked a sense of mystery and anticipation. Violet's heart raced with excitement, and Horsey, resting on her partner's shoulder, seemed ready for the challenges ahead. The cave's interior was dimly lit. It was known there were moonstones scattered around in those caves, and they gave off a soft glow. It was handy to not have to rely on torches to get through. Violet navigated through the cavern, echoes of distant Pokemon cries promising potential encounters ahead. A Zubat swooped overhead with a screech and flew off into the darker reaches of the cavern. V made a curious sound and looked around, keeping an eye out for anything else that might drop down from above. With his eyes up in the air, V ran right into a boulder and cried out as he bounced back onto his butt. But then the boulder moved, and the sound of grinding stone echoed out as the rock turned in place, and two eyes appeared upon it. A Geodude! Midori cries out. Violet, get ready! The girl twirled around in excitement and reached for Horsey's Pokeball before remembering the creature was on her shoulder. She fumbled around, dropped the Pokeball, and waved over at the rock Pokemon.
Go, Horsey, go!
The little water Pokemon narrowed its eyes with excited determination and launched forward, ready to engage in its first battle for Violet.
Use bubble, Horsey!
The Geodude tried to roll out of the way as a stream of bubbles shot toward him, but he wasn't quick enough and was hit hard. The water softened him up a great deal and he fled in defeat. Way to go, Violet! That was some quick... But before Midori can finish, the entire cave rumbled violently, and large chunks of rock fell from the ceiling. A Pokemon screeched out, and it sounded in pain. To be continued.